I think, Jared, the bottom line is that what we're trying to do is get a strategy. And when you just arbitrarily pick one third, that's not a strategy. That's budget driving the strategy instead of the strategy driving the budget. And what we think we need to have is a different look where we are shifting back to a situation where the Pentagon is actually creating a strategy and then saying, where do we put our resources to meet that strategy? If that comes out to be one third, that's great. But let's don't go in and have fetters where we have been locked into two things. One, some arbitrary number that policymakers who haven't even looked at strategy from either the White House or Congress are giving to the Pentagon. And number two, once they get it, they're locked into some arbitrary accounting rule that doesn't really dictate the best allocation of our resources to meet the ultimate strategy that we have to defend the country.
In your op-ed, you call this intellectually lazy. If we accept the argument that this is the wrong way to do things, where do you point the finger mostly? Is it the way the budgets are developed in the Pentagon? Is it on the Hill? Is it a mixture of both?
I think it's a mixture of both, Jared. I think one of the things, you know, that you constantly have arguments rightfully placed in many situations in Congress is that many policymakers are more concerned with parochial interest and protecting their own geographical areas than they are in really looking at the overall national strategic goals of the country. I think sometimes that's a fair criticism, but I think the same thing is true in the Pentagon, that sometimes you have each of the services that get locked into just protecting their own turf instead of sitting back and saying, okay, what is our national strategy? Where do we put those resources? So it becomes something that's easier to do than to deal with the politics of trying to overcome it.
And so who's responsible in your view, or who should be responsible for trying to come up with a more strategic approach to budgeting?
I think we need to have a dialogue that should begin with anybody that's concerned about national defense. And we've been trying to do that by bringing together policymakers, generals, admirals, bringing together writers, thinkers, and saying, how do we start messaging this, not just to insider baseball, but how do we take this across the country to explain to the American people, we've got to change these curve lines on national defense if we're going to really do what we need to defend this country. Now, as we change that messaging, I think we need to have consistent dialogues between Congress and the oversight committees here that are looking at the Pentagon and the Pentagon to say, we want to move outside of this budget-driven strategy approach that we've had and get back to the days where we're doing longer-term strategic thinking and then putting our resources to make that work. Jared, we're just no longer at the point in time where we can outrun all of our mistakes like maybe we once were, and that's why it's important that we get this right.
It seems to me that as DOD went through, you know, the process that led up to the Defense Strategic Guidance last year, even through all the sequester mess, there's been a face that they've put forward that's kind of said, we're all in this together. They've presented, at least in public, a united front on these budget decisions. Do you run the risk that if you get rid of this fair share approach to budgeting, that you start to create sort of destructive infighting between the military departments?
Well, I don't think you're going to have destructive infighting, because I think if you talk to most of them, they realize this is the right approach. But I think there's a two-prong attack that has to go with that, Jared. We don't just wait till we get within the Pentagon and say, okay, now we expect you guys to come up and do away with your own turf battles and parochial interests. I think before we even get there, we've got to tackle something much bigger, and that is we can't be placing on the Pentagon these dollars that we are pulling out of the air, which literally is what's been happening in the last several years, and saying to the Pentagon, now go make this work. We have to do the reverse and once again get back to the point where as a nation, we're looking back and saying strategically, this is what has to be done to defend the country. Now, how do we get the resources to do it? And, Jared, that's not what's happened in the last several years. We've had these numbers that have been arbitrary numbers. These cuts that happened to the Pentagon, you saw most of the Pentagon coming over here saluting and saying, you know, these cuts were right and these cuts were okay and we could sustain them. But they really didn't believe that. You know, behind the scenes when you were talking, they knew they were taking some enormous risk in doing that. And so I want to get back to a point where we're strategically defending the country, and not that it's not just budget driven.
Someone who's a little bit more cynical than me might look at the op-ed that you wrote with Congressman Larson and say, oh, okay, these are two members of Congress who happen to represent districts with a very large naval presence. So I guess the question there is this really at its core an argument for more sea power, and maybe the Army doesn't need as big a slice of the pie?
Well, I think there's two things that you have to look at. The first thing is that it's not true for me. I actually have a much larger Army presence in my district.
Oh, is that right?
Than I do a naval presence. So you can't really say that. Secondly, I am very, very supportive of the Army and what they have done, and, you know, have the track record to back that up. Third thing is it doesn't necessarily follow like the night to the day that the Army is the one that gets cut on this. It just simply says put it on the table and ask the tough questions of what needs to be done for the strategy that we have for the country. And I don't think there are not very many people that come back and can say every single year it just happens to align like the stars that it should break down a third, a third, a third to reach the strategy that we have to defend the country. I don't think anybody would defend that as the right strategic analysis.
You make an interesting point about Goldwater Nichols, which you say created a least common denominator approach to budgeting, this fair share approach, which is interesting because I think a lot of the people in the lead up to Goldwater Nichols, their critique of the way the Joint Chiefs were organized was that it created a least common denominator approach to, you know, military advice to the President and the Secretary of Defense. Talk to me a little bit about why you think that Goldwater Nichols had that unintended consequence.
Well, I think Goldwater Nichols, first of all, was a great piece of legislation. I think it did an awful lot in terms of jointness and what it's done for us as a nation, but it does have some unintended consequences. And one of those is that because you're trying to do that jointness approach so much and there's such a premium on that, it does tend to lead to kind of the least common denominator in terms of where you're putting your dollars and where you're putting your resources. The other thing it does is not just where we put the dollars, it's where you put the training. So, for example, now one of the things that we are measuring, and we'll go back and pick the Navy if you want to look at that one, but you know, we've cut down the time that many of our officers are actually at sea because we've put a premium on them being in other training capacities and other service components, and I'll tell you, you see a real detriment in doing that. And so what we would say, Jared, is we are a firm believer in Goldwater Nichols. We think it was a good piece of legislation. But no piece of legislation is perfect. You need to continually look at the unintended consequences and just tweak those and correct them. And that's where we feel we need to do on some of the components of Goldwater Nichols.
Before I let you go, I want to ask you briefly about the contingency plan that Secretary Hagel delivered to the Senate yesterday, laying out what some of the consequences would be under prolonged sequestration in 2014. He didn't seem to get too specific on where he thought the cuts would have to come from, but what were your thoughts on
well,
the
first of
today?
All, I think we have had not necessarily profiles and courage from the Pentagon over the last several years, because what we saw is we had this $587 billion, and the Armed Services Committee staff would say it was more like $778 billion of cuts that took place, Jared, as you know, before sequestration. And each one of them came over here and basically said, oh, no, we're good to go. These cuts are fine. They're okay. They weren't fine. And we're beginning to see the repercussions of that now. Second thing was sequestration. It's going to have a hugely detrimental impact on this country. I mean, we were just looking at some of our nuclear programs today, the training that's going to be cut, the impacts that all that's going to have. And I would much prefer the Secretary of Defense to be coming over here pounding on the desk and saying, wait a minute, it's time for us to go back and start looking at our strategy and saying what dollars it's going to take to meet that strategy. And then, Congress, you got to come up with those dollars, then coming in here and saying, here's all the cuts we're going to make to national defense. So I wasn't very impressed with the Secretary's letter.
Are you at all hopeful that you'll get a little bit more detail and what you're looking for when the strategic choices and management review that we're expecting comes out?
Jared, I'm not overly optimistic of that. I think the bigger goal that we have is taking our message to the American people and changing the curve lines. Because whether you look at the Army, whether you look at the Marines, the Air Force, if we don't change these ultimate curve lines, it's going to have an enormous detrimental effect on the national security of this country, not just in the short term, but for decades to come.
From the outside here, this is my last question. It doesn't appear that there's too much of a prospect of sequestration getting canceled at the moment. Do you see any hopeful signs from where you sit on the Hill?
I think it's a difficult lift for us. I spent about a year going around the country trying to stop sequestration before it was actually implemented. But I think the ultimate hope that I am encouraged by, Jared, is that the American people, if we once again come back and begin telling them what's at stake and why we need the kind of defenses we need, they will respond to it. When you looked at sequestration beginning, it had only a 6% concern level with the American people. By the end of that process, about 67 to 70% of the American people will say, we don't want any more cuts to defense. I think it's a messaging that we can't just keep inside baseball here in Washington. We got to carry it around to the American people. I think when we do and show them what's at stake, they're going to say, we don't want to dismantle the greatest military we've ever seen in the world.